You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome in to a special weekend, Locked On Pacers, because we've already hit the five-episode threshold this week. Today's a special episode. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News, and over at 8.9 seconds. Because this show is special, full playoff preview with Locked On Celtics host John Corrales. We talk Pacers and Celtics, nothing more, nothing less. And because it's a sixth episode, it's essentially free, no ads, straight basketball for 45 minutes. Sit down, get ready, let's do it.
Some bonus weekend Locked On Podcast Network content. Celtics starts tomorrow. Woo, indeed. Locked On Celtics, Locked On Pacers, back together again. How many times have we done these shows together now, John?
I know. This is our third time. And just like the Celtics and the Pacers, we're going to talk way too much and hate each other by the end of it.
Oh, that is a good analogy. I hope I don't hate you by the end of it.
No,
New things about recording shows every day.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't take long for people to end up hating me. So maybe I can stretch it out over a few extra days. We've got a little series coming up. We've talked about it. We've sort of previewed other games. We did a quick hitter for the old parent company, but we haven't really had an extended. You know, the playoffs are different, so.
The playoffs are different, and we did our own Celtics preview on our own end on Tuesday, but that we recorded it pre-Smart News, so that sucks. And we didn't have the Celtics perspective, which obviously sucks. So much to delve into. I don't want to start with an injury. However, I think in this instance, it actually is a good starting point because this is what I've been saying. Maybe I'm off base here, but in terms of importance to the Celtics, I think tier one is very clearly Kyrie Horford, but I think Marcus Smart might be the third guy. Am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy. I would agree.
Okay. Good.
We, in our last podcast, we handed out our sort of regular season kind of awards in our own crazy way. And our top three guys this season without, I think, any sort of argument were those three guys. Kyrie and Al Horford just are monsters. But Smart does a ton, and obviously he's the guy that has been checking Bogdanovich, and so that's going to be a real difficult decision for Brad Stevens. How do you approach guarding him, and especially in a playoff series where he's going to get a ton more minutes? So but aside from just him being able to guard a guy, Marcus Smart does a couple other things extraordinarily well, which is he knows what the other team is doing. And I know in the playoffs, everybody knows what the other team is doing, and there are few secrets. But Marcus Smart, once he hears a play call, is directing his teammates very often, and even from the bench. And so they're going to lose a lot of that direction. And just losing that voice, that guy who basically captains their defense in the backcourt, that hurts. And the Celtics are kind of lucky that it's a playoff series in that that's the only team they're game planning for. So if this was a key stretch down the end of the regular season to get that playoff positioning, it'd be really difficult because Marcus Smart knows what everybody else is doing. And the other guys in the team we're playing Orlando now. What do they do again? Like that type of thing.
Yeah. But
in a weird way, facing one team over the course of 2 weeks allows everybody to focus on that one team's tendencies. So it minimizes that loss. And the other thing that Smart does is he's a much better actual point guard than a lot of people give him credit for. He is a very good passer, like extraordinarily good passer. And that's going to be obviously a thing that hurts the Celtics. And he's allowed the Celtics to play Kyrie off ball. And he likes catching the ball. Kyrie catching the ball on the run sometimes, getting a screen, you know, or making a backdoor cut, you know, some of those different sets where he's, I don't know if people know floppy action, whatever, but like cutting across the baseline and coming
former
up the other
college
side.
Basketball player, John.
Sorry. But like, you know, I sometimes got to catch myself.
I know. I do too.
But catching the ball on the run for a guy like Kyrie is a different element than just him using his handles, which he can obviously do. But catching the ball on the run and then changing direction quickly and getting those shots is an element to the game that is going to be missing a little bit when Smart is out. So I would expect to see a ton more high pick and roll with Kyrie and with Al Horford. And my wild card choice to start in his place is Semi Ojeleye.
Wow.
So you can throw, a big kind of like muscular guy that's a decent defender at Bogdanović and try to see if wearing him down with, a big guy can help maybe neutralize him a little bit. And what that one reason why I like that is it doesn't add a player who needs to be fed in the starting lineup. Semi Ojeleye will just stand there and catch and shoot from three. He's not a great 3-point shooter, but he can be better than his percentage. Like he should be better than his percentage, which is like 31 or 32%. But if he can use that physicality against Bogdanović and kind of wear him down a little bit and keep him from getting to spots, make him uncomfortable, and then you just let him sit in a corner and you just run high pick and roll with Kyrie and Horford, and you just do that for like 5 minutes, and then you bring in Hayward and Jaylen Brown together. Like I like the way that rotation plays out. And Brad Stevenson said that it's in practice a couple days ago that starting isn't as important to him as the rotation. So I kind of am thinking that he might be thinking outside the box a little bit.
Yeah. I know Jaylen Brown seemed like the guest to everyone else who wasn't as plugged in as you. Just this guy can replicate some defensive stuff. And I love Jaylen Brown, so I hope that's not the answer. But he can do some defensive stuff. He can limit Bogdanović in a way that some other Celtics like-sized guys cannot, unless you throw Semi into the mix, who is like literally a brick wall with the mortar and a second layer, and you cannot get through him. So that's a good little wrinkle I had not heard of. Did you listen to Zach Lowe and David Thorpe yet? Do their 8x8 for this series?
I did not, no.
So one of the points David Thorpe brought up is, with a team like the Celtics who's had, I don't want to sound completely off base, but a mentally fragile year. Let's call it that to be nice. If the Smart injury is like a looming mental cloud they have to get through, and that was an interesting thought to me, although I have no clue what would be going on with the team in that regard. But it was an interesting point. It's like, oh man, we have to play the Bucks without our best defender. That sucks, like if you get through it. And he wondered if that would have any impact. I don't think it will, but it was still a good addendum to the question of Smart's impact if he's not there. To me, another thing is that the Celtics are replacing Smart with, if Semi plays, this stomps all over what I'm about to say, but it's like you're replacing Smart's minutes with Gordon Hayward, Jaylen Brown, and Jason Tatum, and they're all still good. They're all still positive players. So it's like it's still a loss in that you're losing your skill, a particular skill. It's harder to shut down the Pacers' best offensive option. However, you still have a plus out there on the wing at all or almost all the time. I think Semi's probably still a plus if he's just out there to defend. So in that way, I think it's like mitigatable, and that makes it less scary. But in the skill department and all the things you've just described, with blowing up actions, when the Pacers run floppy themselves for Bojan, it's like, who cares? Smart's just going to run through the screen and knock
something
on that. It's like, it doesn't matter. When he's out there, and that kind of stuff is gone, but you still have impact on their areas from the other guys, which it's still a big deal, but it's like less of a big deal. I don't know. I feel crazy saying that.
No, it's not. I think it hurts them more in a series against the Bucks. My pushback my pushback against the other thought about the mental cloud is that the one thing the Celtics have had problems with this season is that focus, and through some adversity like this, it may force them to focus more because it's a situation where they say, okay, now we don't have Smart. There's nobody here to clean up our mess. There's none of this stuff. So we gotta focus here. and, you know, smack themselves a little bit, splash some cold water in their face, have a cup of strong black coffee, you know, get ready for studying for that exam, I've heard. But that's a thing that could bring them together. It's almost like the star has gone out, like the Pacers. The star has gone down. Oh, no, what do we do? Well, you know what? Got to band together, boys, and do this. You know, it's going to take a total team effort. So
let's just jump ahead of the if the Pacers pull off the upset. And if I hear one person say, oh, they would have won with Smart, I'm going to lose it since Vic is not playing in
series. Yeah, no, no.
I look forward to that day. But
The Celtics should still win.
I agree. I still think they have more talent and have hit a stride. And I have a guy on the Celtics I want to talk about after I talk about a Pacers guy, if you don't mind.
That's what we're here for.
All right, cool. So I have a player that I think is the most important for the Pacers' success in this series. And that is Mr. Domantas Sabonis, who shot 50% or better in all four games against Boston this year, including a masterful 20.7 rebound performance. He had good games on the glass, which is important because, you know, Baines is great on the glass, but he can actually hang with him. He's one of the few guys who has the skill level to do that, including big offensive rebounding performances in each game. And I know that's been a bit – every single Boston person who I've seen write a preview about the series has talked about the Pacers on the offensive glass.
Yeah.
And so I think Sabonis is a big-time way for the Pacers to get a swing in their favor. And I'm wondering if he's the guy that you would be the most lasered in on stopping from the Boston end because of his success against them this season.
Yeah, I mean, he's the obvious choice because once you stop Bogdanović, okay, let's assume that the plan works, then somebody else has to beat the Celtics. And you look down the list of guys who can beat the Celtics. Well, Miles Turner could do some damage. Thad Young can do some damage. Sabonis is, you know, off the bench is a very, very dangerous guy for all the reasons that you said. And the Celtics have had problems with bigs. I've said it here before. I've said it on our NBA, Locked On NBA podcast preview that the Celtics, and especially Celtics guards, have had trouble checking guys like Sabonis because he'll set a pick, he'll smash the big, and the big has to recover and slide on down as the guard is trying to penetrate. And then the Celtics guard will do nothing to help the big who just got picked. And what ends up happening is the guard just does what he's supposed to do, draw that double team out just a little bit, and you just dump it down to throw the alley-oop, and Sabonis is going to end up doing chin-ups. Or he'll shoot it, and Sabonis is there to clean up the mess because no one is behind that pick and roll to box out. So that's the thing that is that's how Sabonis can destroy the Celtics. And the thing about offensive rebounds, it's not just, oh, Sabonis had 16 points on five offensive rebounds. It's that you got to stop. You've worked your ass off on defense. You got the stop, but you didn't do the last thing that requires the actual defensive stop, and that's secure the rebound. And sometimes it's more demoralizing, not just to have this guy get the ball and put it back, to get the ball, kick it back out, and run 20 more seconds of offense that you're just like, oh man, I got to play offense. I got to play defense again. The only reason anybody plays defense is to stop the other team so you can get the ball back and go do the thing you want to do and score. So when you don't get to do that, it's demoralizing. So that's really where the Pacers can wear the Celtics down. And Sabonis is like the number one guy that's going to be doing that, I think. And especially off the bench, when you start two bigs, they're going to have to figure out a really good way to stagger these guys, or they're going to force Brad Stevens to play more Marcus Morris because he's the guy that can, that, you know, he's got the beef to kind of do that. And him on the floor offensively, he just is just a tad too selfish and is all too willing to take shots. And you can try to dare him to beat you, and he probably won't.
I am willing to let Marcus Morris play more minutes if that is.
Yeah. Now, I'll say from a Celtics perspective, if all of a sudden the first half of the season, Marcus Morris, pre-All-Star Marcus Morris shows up,
the ball,
then that guy was a 50-40-90 guy. The guy after the All-Star break has been trash for the most part, but you know, it's a roll of the dice. But I think if I'm Indy, that's definitely what I want to see.
Yeah, I like your former player mental analysis of an offensive rebound.
Yeah, man, it sucks, man. That sucks.
Were you a big? Are you tall? Are you tall?
I'm 6'5", yeah. So, I grew up in Rhode Island, so I'm not like a New York 6'5", where I was a point guard. At 6'5", I was like the biggest guy in like the northern half of the state. So I was listed as a center and a power forward. So
in Indiana, your size is very dictating of your position. You'd have been a nice tweener here.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. That's I honestly, I wish I could have been. I love my hometown. I love, you know, New England and all of that, but the basketball part of me is like, damn, I wish somebody would have taught me to dribble a lot sooner, because I didn't learn to dribble until I was like 26. Next thing you know, I'm in like some YMCA league and I'm doing inside outs and crossing people over. I'm like, where was this in college? Oh man. Sucks.
I wonder if any NBA players have gone through that exercise. Like Jokic one day was like, wait, this is easy.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's probably those guys like Anthony Davis or you know, those guys that started out as like point guards. You like they were always small, and then all of a sudden, next you know, oh wait, I'm huge. But you always know how to dribble. Like that's the type of guy.
Unfair. The Pacers just drafted a guy like that in the second round. I hope Alize Johnson turns into something.
Yeah.
I mean, so with Sabonis, and another thing that adds a wrinkle to him for me is the Celtics love the like size defender switch, right? And
yeah,
they have so many of those guys, and Horford gets included in that group a lot. I think Horford is actually not as good of a matchup for him because they'll switch more. Whereas Morris, if they don't switch, can be more tanky and on. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being crazy, but it seems like the small guy might actually be more effective in that instance. But the other Sabonis thing that is good is if you're going to switch a lot, is he can create out of the post. He doesn't have to score himself. He can sit his ass down and pass to someone. You know, what am I reading here? Three assists, five assists against Boston this year. That's 16. That's four a game from your center. That's outstanding.
Yeah.
Your backup center. That's outstanding stuff. And, you know, they'll collapse on him. And I know they doubled him from the baseline side a few times on the block in the last game because he did so well in Boston. But, you know, there's just like, I think they have strategies to cover him. But I also think that because of his passing, he can do other stuff if they're switching it. I just think he's going to be so useful for the Pacers and should play more minutes than he ended up playing in most of the regular season games. I don't think it's a coincidence that in the two games he played the most minutes, the Pacers did better. So
let me ask you a question here.
Yeah.
Do the Pacers, because this is all matchups and everything goes out the window, do the Pacers do something crazy like start Sabonis? And maybe do like
me. I don't think they're going to change their rotation. They have been locked into it for two seasons now. But yeah. Adam, my co-host, I don't know if you've talked to him before. I think you have one time. He's been all about Thad at the three. Throw Thaddeus Young on Tatum or whoever.
Here's exactly what I was going to suggest. What if you started is Collison back?
He is. Everybody's healthy now.
Okay. Well,
besides Oladipo.
So what do you say? What if you started Collison, Bogdanovich, Sabonis,
Thad,
Young,
yikes,
and Turner, and just go super big?
That would be awesome.
And then just bring Tyreek off the bench, because if Boston had Marcus Smart, I wouldn't care, because Marcus Smart is basically a center in a guard's body, and he would guard anybody. Like the most fun I have all season is watching bigger guys switch on to Smart and then think they can back him down in the post. And all but like two guys, like Kawhi Leonard can do it. Like there's two guys in the league that can do it. And every other big's like, oh, mouse in the house, and they can't move him. And they end up taking like a fadeaway 20 footer. It's like, wait a minute, that didn't go how it was supposed to go. But without him there, now if the Celtics, it depends on who they start, but like, bringing Tyreek Evans off the bench, I don't know, maybe you unlock something with him off the bench and you go super big and you really throw the Celtics for a loop, because now you've got a 6'11 guy. Who do you guard him with? Sabonis can shoot over the top of Semi Ojeleye, so that kind of goes out the window, and he can back down Jaylen Brown, so that's going to be tough. That's how you might force more Marcus Morris, because Morris becomes the guy who's kind of tall enough and strong enough to match up with that. And Morris in the starting lineup is your best advantage. So if I'm thinking of going against the Celtics, Tyreek to the bench, or yeah, and then you start Sabonis in his place and go big.
Tyreek's been mostly bench as well.
Has he been? Was it been Wesley Matthews?
Yeah, but boom, Wesley Matthews cannot put ball in basket recently. So,
well, maybe against the bench, maybe a little bit off the bench, it helps. I don't know.
Yeah.
I would say my
I'm all for mixing going big. You have to win the series. Like
that's it.
It's a season. Yeah, you have to do stuff to win the series. If it means making drastic lineup changes, it means making drastic lineup changes. I look forward to the nerdy NBA Twitter people freaking out when the Celtics go big instead of small. How can this win? There's no wings.
Yeah.
This is impossible.
Just start Daniel Tice. Just start Robert Williams. Kyrie, Tice, Williams, Baines, and Horford. Go.
What are these NBA coaches who know more than me thinking? I'm all for going big if it means drawing the Celtics into worse lineups, because I mean it would be very hard to create a shot. Like you're relying on Bojan and Darren Collison to do a ton with the ball, but you know Sabonis can do stuff in that way too. I think it would be enough. It's not the craziest idea Adams ever had on his list of crazy ideas.
Yeah, I mean, and you know what, like the Shemi Ojeley idea, 5 minutes, just 5 minutes of it, and it just throws off the rotation where. Like if you threw Sabonis out there and Brad wasn't expecting it, like you each submit at the 20-minute mark your starting lineups, and let's say he does throw Shemi out there and he looks at the lineups and go, oh crap, they're starting Sabonis and they're going big, like then he starts to the wheels start to turn. And so, you know, any little advantage, it lasts for like an instant, because NBA coaches can figure things out. And I'm sure if you and I have had this idea, it might have come up in a meeting somewhere along the line.
They're going to bum you out. You think you've done something smart, and you're like, someone's thought of that.
Yeah, like Brad's like, yeah, I thought about that like a month ago.
I thought of a Keurig for like soups, you know, like for ramen noodles or something. Instead of, and I was like, oh, it's genius. I was like, no way no one's thought of that. Why do I even bother? So another thing you just said is if the Pacers go big, they can get Morris on the floor more, which is beneficial to them. I want to counter and go back to Celtics talk and say, can the Pacers do to get Terry Rozier on the court more? Because he was butt in the regular season. But I do worry you get more Rozier on the court and all of a sudden the Terry from last year's playoff shows up and now you've got a problem on your hands because that player was good. Yeah. So I don't know what to expect from him. I don't know if I should want him to play more or less. It's a tough thought process for me with him.
Yeah, my answer is I really don't know. I don't know with him.
I should think he should be bad. I have no reason to think he's suddenly going to be better than he has been for 8 months. But I don't know, man. Like the Drew Bledsoe jersey and you know just that was fun and good.
Here's the thing with Rozier is that he can be good. And it's why you got to look at the why can he be good? What makes him good? Well, he was good last year in the playoffs because he had the minutes and he played like 36 minutes a game. And he's a slow burn. Like he has big fourth quarters because he generally takes a while. He can sometimes come out hot, but it generally takes him a little while to find his range and he needs to shoot himself into that rhythm. So that's like more Terry Rozier. You got to be careful because there's like a happy medium where a little bit will be enough, but not too little because that doesn't matter. You want enough where he's still searching for his rhythm, but not so much that he finds it and burns you down the stretch. And so what can the Pacers do that I think you counter with? Like, if my idea of going big is not going to work, then you go small. Then what you do is you sit, like you move Thad to the bench and then you start like a smaller or you use more of Corey Joseph. Like, I know there's been some questions about him, right? Like you just need to throw more guards out there. If you're trying to bait more Terry Rozier, then you just, it's got to be like a guard heavy lineup. And what you got to be careful of is going too far out of your comfort zone to bait the other team into doing it. That then you're not playing good basketball. You're just trying to bait the other team into something. The idea of going big, I think, works because it dictates a matchup rather than baiting a guy out. Like, so I don't know if you can tell the difference of what I'm talking about. Like,
I can.
It feels
baiting
like
baiting a guy out is like sending Giannis in to have that and on purpose because they always like to match him up.
Right. So, part of why I suggested Semi Ojeleye in the first place as a starter was because it allows the rest of the rotation to be normal, and it would play Terry Rozier maybe 2 minutes at the end of a quarter, 2 minutes to start the beginning of the next quarter. You get to rest Kyrie Irving for 4 minutes of playing time, plus the extended playoff timeout, which is like 3.5 minutes, 4 minutes. So you get to sit Kyrie for a fair amount of time, still minimize the potential damage that Rozier can do, and Kyrie goes back in rather than starting him or anything like that. So when I go back to Brad Stevens saying the rotations are more important to me, that's why I think starting a guy like Semi just keeps so much other stuff in place. And if you start Jaylen Brown, you start Gordon Hayward, like especially Gordon Hayward, because he's become a very important playmaker for the Celtics. He does a lot of ball handling, does a lot of passing. He's a tremendous passer. If you start him, you kind of burn the amount of time that you can have him on the floor with Terry Rozier. Like, If Rozier's off the ball and you have Hayward there on the floor, like another ball handler, then Brad can call plays and be like, no, Terry, you're in this spot. And he, you know what I'm saying? Like, he doesn't have that guy that can hijack things. So rotation wise, if there's a way to change that starting lineup, maybe you go back to me. I talked myself back into going big as a way to force the Celtics to do something, but you need to figure out a way to get Brad Stevens to change his rotations. So that's my very long-winded, probably doesn't make sense.
Well, I was going to ask about that because you said you want to keep the rotation solid, but I looked through, it's like Kyrie, Tatum, Horford, those three guys, the only three that started every game they played. Then you had like a mixture of Morris, Smart, Brown, Hayward, Terry. I mean, Terry is mostly when Kyrie was hurt. Baines got 18 starts. And then you have like Tice getting 2 starts, Semi getting 3 starts. It's like, how solid was it that you're trying not to disrupt it? And if he is putting all this focus on it, is that because they're ironing it out in a different way and they want to make sure that they've got that nailed down?
Well, I think the focus is to, like, they had they had a lot of injuries to Baines, like Baines especially. So they started to use the two big lineups, and then Baines broke his hand, and then they tried it again, and he had this weird kind of foot bruise thing that held him out for a while. So like they had the beginning part, the first 20 games of the season, where they were like a 500 team. And then they changed the starting lineups because Jaylen Brown got hurt. So they threw Smart and Morris in the starting lineup, and it worked great. Partly because Smart was awesome and they needed that toughness and they needed Morris's toughness, but also because at that point, Morris was a 50-40-90 guy. Like literally in the first part of the season, he was 50-40-90. Once that kind of went away, that starting lineup was not as effective. And Brad Stevens wanted to go back to the two big lineup with Baines in the starting lineup instead of Morris, just never really could until the end of the season. The lineups that you saw in the last two Celtics Pacers games, like that's what I think is much more likely to happen. Like that Boston game at home that came down to the wire, that is much more indicative, I think, of what Brad Stevens is going to do, because Terry Rozier played 15 minutes in that game. And what happened in that, also Hayward and Brown only played like 25 minutes apiece. I would expect them to play like 32 to 35 minutes. So that will be like the added wrinkle beyond that. So less Marcus Morris, more of those other two guys. I think that's going to be more the lineup that the rotation that Brad Stevens is going to like to use.
Until we bait him out of it with giant people.
That's it. That's it. Kylo Quinn as your point guard.
Kylo Quinn might sneakily be like the best passer on the Pacers.
Kylo Quinn.
That dude can whiz the ball around. I was randomly like, while you were talking, thinking like, I wonder if Baines is better than O'Quinn, which the answer is yes, but it's just me amusing thought exercise while you were talking. The Rozier and the rotation blending together is interesting. I know he had some maybe not big in that they should have been big, but like he had big personality quotes this week when asked about filling in for Smart's minutes. And when he says he'll be playoff ready, like you can't doubt him. Last year he proved it. Like I feel like you have to give the player the benefit of the doubt. But October through March to me is an overwhelming evidence of time that does not frighten
yes.
me in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say the more Rozier and Morris you see on the floor, the happier you should be.
I 100% agree. Well, and see, like for you guys, like Tyreek's probably been the least effective rotation player for the Pacers this year, but he just got like his knees are like gross. Like he gets an injection or like an uninjection, like gets fluid out of them and like every week something. Yeah. It's nuts. But he always plays better right after these, there's a shot to his knee, whatever it is going in or out. And then it like tapers off. Well, he just had an uninjection before this Hawks game. And then he went off. He had 27 points on 14 shots. It's like the player that I would least want on the floor would have been Tyreek in this series. But if he can play like that, then all of a sudden you have a new conversation where it's the same with Terry, where it's like, if you get what he can be, you want him out there. But if you get what he has been, you don't. It's tough.
Right. That's basically, it's the same type of guy.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. When it comes down to it in the playoffs, as anyone who's watched more than one NBA playoff game ever will tell you, they come down to the power of stars. I mean, you could talk about the minutiae all you want. It matters. Like if you win all the subtleties, you can win the game. But if it's 50-50 in the subtleties battle or the 50-50 in the X's and O's chess match, all of a sudden it comes down to the team with the stars, and the Celtics have more of them. And having Kyrie, Horford, and Tatum, and even Hayward, who has been awesome since coming back from his neck strain, I think is the boon that has the Celtics to me as the favorites. Would you agree with everything I just said?
I would agree with everything you just said.
Good, good. That's just what it comes down to me, is the Pacers have to either be far ahead tactically, which of Brad Stevens is hard. And Brad Stevens and I are alumni of the same high school, so we have that heart-to-heart connection there. So let me tell you more about Brad Stevens. Which means the other way they do it is being a tick above, or probably two or three ticks above in execution, which is also hard. And to me, anecdotally like that, I don't know in which way they're going to be able to get that done, given that the Celtics have four guys with the name and the game.
Yeah, I mean, we spent a lot of time talking about the possibilities of what can Indy do and what can they draw out of the Celtics. The bottom line is, if these Celtics, just even without Marcus Smart, play up to their best abilities, and if Kyrie and Al Horford can just run that pick, like how do you defend a Kyrie Irving, Al Horford pick and roll?
Very
like,
carefully.
It just comes down to that. Yeah. Like, yeah, because, and especially if you have surrounded by shooters, I mean, there's just, it's very difficult.
We talked about it. I said, do everything you can. Now, Kyrie, take the layup. It's like a 1.2 points per possession shot if he shoots inside the paint. Like,
yep,
make him pass. That's what I would do. But like, he's such a good passer and he can get his own shot in any way. It's like, ugh, he's insane.
Yeah. So it just boils down to that. Those two guys, like the biggest fear, and we've been saying it since last season's play. If something ever happened to Al Horford, that's the one injury we can't overcome. Like that's the one that just screws everything. No way. Everyone else has a a series of guys that's replaceable, that, you know, you can figure out a way to sort of match. Like, obviously you couldn't make up for Kyrie Irving, but, you know, Terry Rozier last year was, you know, 36 minutes. Terry Rozier was adequate enough, and with other guys picking up their production, you know, like you sort of make up for some of the production. Yeah. You know, that's how it goes. But without Al Horford, man, whew, forget it. So if like that's when he's not on the floor,
Kylo Quinn starts, soaks up his five fouls on Horford, bangs him up in the first.
That's it.
In the first 10 minutes of the game.
Just five hard fouls, boom, boom, boom. Like, oh my God. Yeah, but that's going to be what it takes. You have to bang the hell out of him.
Something like that. Like, remember when teams used to have like a guy they'd specifically sub in for their hack-a-shack?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like this guy who never plays finishes the game with like 7 seconds of playing time, and it's like some guy you've never heard of, fouling Andre Drummond five times. It's like, this is stupid.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when this guy gets in the game, like he's coming in like work boots and, you know, taking off like a denim jacket instead of a warm up. Yeah, all right, what do you want?
It's ridiculous. Yeah, Horford is hard to match for the Pacers too, just because he can do everything inside and out, offense, defense. I mean, underrated rebounder just because he's always far from the rim, but like, literally everything.
Yeah. So I think the Celtics, like you said, they have the star power. And enough of it. And it's like Gordon Hayward's playing much, much better. Ugh. And, you know, get a little more
from about him a little bit too.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's do it.
Well, it's just because like maybe it's fresh on the Pacers' mind because he went 9 for 9 with 21 points in David's life, which is just an absurd game. Like if you get that twice in the playoffs, you win the series. That's it. You're done.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, I don't know what to expect from him either. It's the same with Terry, because obviously different. Like, even Gordy being bad is, like, effective enough, and he's tall. No chance. And it's weird that I think that like, him being that good is the most important guy for the Celtics, but... I am who I am. Maybe it's because he's from Indy and I'm biased. But.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he just adds a dimension that the Celtics had hoped to have, and now they finally sort of have it. Him being good, it just changes the equation. You have probably 65 or 70 games of data that shows you one thing, and then all of a sudden, boom. The dynamic changes a lot. So like what's the lineup data going to tell you? Well, the Gordon Hayward before the All-Star break was mostly terrible. Like he had some moments. He had some
that one came games. Out of your mouth. Like you didn't want to say it.
No, but I'm like, that's what he was. Like he was mostly not a good player, but he had like, he could still pass. Like he was still passing. Well, he was still like, taking good shots. He just couldn't, make shots. He had no confidence. And as I say a million times on the podcast, he was driving, but never with the intent to score. Like it was a process, and Brad Stevens needed to play him all of these games prior to this, even though it may have caused some dissension in the locker room when guys who were better than him in that moment were not getting the same minutes that he was getting, were not getting or saw their minutes decrease because he needed minutes. Like even that was worth this, because we don't get here without having been there. And that's, I've been a big proponent of, you got to keep playing Hayward. I know it doesn't look good. I know he's got like 0-for-2 in 25 minutes and it doesn't look great, but still you got to keep pressing forward. And now here we are at this moment, and he finally is aggressive. He's finally attacking. And when somebody challenges him, he can be explosive enough to switch hands and finish, you know, jumping in the air and being able to decide in the air is one hell of a skill that you can have. And when you've had it and you lose it, that sucks.
Yeah.
That really sucks, because you were so used to jumping and saying, okay, now what? And then when you're already on the ground after now what, it hurts your feelings a lot. So I can say that from personal experience, that goes away. My mind's never coming back. At least Hayward's came back. So
yeah,
that ability is really what changes the game for him, because then he can draw fouls. He feels confident enough to go in there and finish. And then when he draws that attention, boom, he can look. If he knows where his guys are, then that's going to be the thing that really differentiates him. So him being this kind of player, and I still think he's like maybe 80% back. He still needs the summer to get 100% back.
Right.
But that the guy that he is now, he doesn't need to get any better in the playoffs to help the Celtics. Like, this is the only kind of version of him that they need.
Yeah, and you talked about his off the dribble stuff. Like if you zoom out completely from this series, take away the name, the injury, it's like we have a 6'9" guy who can take defenders off the dribble and pass. That's awesome. All of a sudden, that guy you've had all season who can't shoot and can do those two things can shoot. That's awesome. Suddenly, you have a very dangerous player. Then you throw in the name. This is Gordon Hayward. The defender is like, holy shit, I got to defend Gordon Hayward every possession. That's exhausting. That's hard. That is a huge, 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 huge boon to a bench with all of that put together. And if he can even be a semblance of this, I know it's what is the short sample after the next train? Like 7 games, 6 games, something like that. And then he had this fake ankle injury to close the season, right? But if that's really what he is now, or what he's going to be in the series, that is an insanely hard player to match, especially for a bench unit, and especially if it's going to be Doug McDermott guarding him, which, my God, I hope that something can be done to avoid that being the situation. So, not that, no, McDermott. Like, a lot of guys come to Indiana.
He's not Dougie McDefense. He's Dougie McBuckets, so.
Well, okay, every guy gets better on D when they come to Indy, and McDermott did too.
Sure,
he went from awful to less awful. He's still not good at that. At that end of the floor. So Hayward, I think, is just a huge opportunity to swing the series and be big. And I think the name is helping my analysis of him poorly, because it's like, this is Gordon Hayward, and because I'm from Indy where he did all his magical stuff. But it's like, I just feel like he can be so big for this series that if he's post next
year, entire Hayward, player run.
Done. It's like, so this is Zach Lowe's favorite thing. He'll pick like a small thing and be like, if the Blazers role players are hitting their threes, that's it. They'll win the game. If not, they lose. To me, it's Gordon Hayward. If Gordon Hayward shoots 6 out of 9, that's it. The Celtics win. The game's over. If he shoots 2 of 9, all of a sudden you're in the trenches battling in other places.
No, that's true. That's true. So if he's that guy, then it's, like I said, it's a playoff changing, not just series changing. It's a playoff changing development. Like, if he can be that guy that he's been over the past few games in the playoffs, then that just changes a lot, because it's one big, big performer that you have to account for. So yeah. I'm happy about that.
Do you have any Pacers guys you want to talk about? Or do you want to do serious predictions?
Let's just do serious predictions, because I think we've talked about all the most important guys.
We have. Now that Bojan can get free without Smart, I'm thinking of all the guys now. Weston Matthews.
Are we going to get into an extended TJ Leaf discussion?
No, he won't play. Oh my God. If he plays, one of the teams is up by more than 20 with less than 4 minutes.
I will say, it's Brad Stevens, in his quest to just make sure there's no bulletin board material, referenced TJ Leaf. Like, hey, TJ Leaf's been great against us.
He
like,
did do well in that game that went down to the Kyrie buzzer beater. Leaf was actually really good.
Yeah,
because I tweeted in the fourth quarter, why is Leaf in the game? And then I replied to my own tweet 5 minutes later and said, Leaf was awesome. Great job, PJ. Way to go.
But no, let's go to serious predictions.
Yeah. So pre-Smart, I think we kind of did, Celtics in 5 kind of level of guessing. I think post-Smart doesn't change it so much that I'm going to like swing the team that wins, but I think maybe that'll help the Pacers get another game. So I think Celtics in 6, yes, winning the game in Baker's life to win the series is where I'm going to land.
I'm going to stick with the 5. I'm going to stick with the 5. You know,
Homer.
I'm just going to
– blind Homer.
I just feel like they can make up for the loss of Smart. Like I've been sitting here writing a ton of articles, and after like three or four, what are they going to do without Marcus Smart articles? Like different, I was like, you know what? This is like, I love Marcus Smart. Like he's awesome. He's awesome to talk to. He's a great person. He's a, you know, tenacious player and all of that stuff. But like this, in this scenario, like in this vacuum, this is manageable. Like this is okay. Like Milwaukee, we'll talk about Milwaukee if we get to that point. But I think right now for the next 2 weeks, I'm okay. So I'm still going to say, because of all the other stuff that we talked about, I think that like, he can help. He can make, I think it would have been five games where he would have made the wins more comfortable and maybe the loss a little tighter, but maybe the wins are a little bit tighter, but they're still going to be wins.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I agree with that sentiment. They just won by 20 in Banker's life. Like,
yeah,
they clearly, I don't think we're moving Smart and adding Darren Collison. Suddenly it's like, that's a tie game. That's, you know, it's like, no, it's like a 10 point game instead. So yeah. I'm with you. I think it's clear who the more talented team is. How many subtleties can the Pacers win? That's hard to do, especially in the playoffs when you're seeing the same team over and over and over.
Yeah. The subtleties go away.
The subtleties do go away. Yep. Where can people follow you to hear all the Celtic side of the story in this series?
Reds_Army_John on Twitter. That's my social media of preference. I don't know how many other basketball players love Instagram, but basketball writers, we're all on Twitter. We love Twitter.
Basketball Instagram is so different than basketball Twitter. It's hysterical.
It is very different.
Basketball Instagram is Russ for MVP and every year. I love, you know, it's very weird.
It's just a
different brand of fan.
It is. It's funny. It's funny when you look at the bubbles in which we live.
There's NBA Facebook. I don't even want to talk about NBA Facebook.
Oh my God. I had been included in an NBA Facebook group a few years ago. I was like, get me out of here. Like it's just.
They hate every player. They just hate every player. It's so bizarre. Yeah. Follow John. The whole playoffs, Mass Live will be flowing with content from him. And is it Tom? Tom's the other guy, right?
Tom Westerholm.
Him and Tom Westerholm.
Tom_NBA. Tom_NBA.
I've seen a bunch of stuff from him, probably retweeted from you.
He's like one of your guys. He's from Iowa, not Indiana, but he's like Midwest.
No, I'm sorry. I'm going to defend the Midwest here. That's not one of our guys. We do not claim Iowans. In the great state of Indiana. I don't care what you coasters think about the Midwest. They're very different places.
Anything west of Connecticut is the Midwest to me. It's like New England, New York, the Midwest, and then California. Like,
did you guys get a goofy NBA on TNT playoff promo picture?
Like the one you got? The car that was running down Miles Turner and the
questionably pace car Corvette on the Daytona track. That was a Pacers preview. I saw the Celtics one. Did you see it?
I didn't. No, is it on? What is it on? Is it on?
It's on the NBA PR or Twitter page. It is. It's Tatum, Kyrie, and I think Horford like walking through like medieval rubble.
That's it. Like what is that?
It has no connection to Boston. I just don't. I don't understand these promos. I don't get it.
Okay.
I want to find it.
I'm looking down. I'm on their media site here, page. So I see take note. Okay. Thunder up. That makes sense. You're gonna get
it. Oh, it's Hayward, not Horford, excuse me.
We go hard, Brooklyn. That's a good one. Wait. There's no car on this one now.
No, they fixed it. That's IMS now too. They got it all fixed.
They did it. Is that you? Was that your doing?
The Pacers Twitter was very happy to see the
That's good. That's excellent. Rise together. What the hell does this mean? Is that supposed to be Ireland? Is that supposed to be an Irish castle?
I think it is Ireland. I believe it is Ireland. But it looks like, I just don't get it. I don't get these ads. I don't get it.
So like the rainbow, like that's supposed to be like the leprechaun, the pot of gold at the end. So they are the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And that's just an old Irish shitty.
If you go down two pictures or three pictures from where you are, you'll get to the Blazers Oregon Trail one, which is hilarious.
Oh, Rip City. Let's just go for a walk. Hey, CJ, yeah. You want to go for a walk in the high weeds? Sure.
I just don't get these. I'm sorry. They're cool, like, graphics, but I don't get them.
Yeah, it's an excellent.
This is what people think of the Midwest. They're like, oh, any old track will do.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. They just Google racetrack. That's
although
it.
I know the person that made it is from Indiana. So I think it was just a graphic design challenge.
I guess, but oh, this Celtics one is just horrible.
Yeah.
This is just, I gotta look at the comments here.
The Jazz one with sign off. It's cool. Lob it to your people. No, I like the Jazz.
Al Horford either. Wow. This is, yeah.
The Thunder one with the line. Yeah. All right. This has been a good ending. This is good.
this is funny.
You can expect more of this content throughout the postseason, folks. Be ready for it. I'm on Twitter at TEastNBA for you Celtics people who want to keep up with me, but you don't have to. I tweet too frequently. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. More playoff content coming your way.